Welcome to episode 84. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, as we continue to make our way through a year of intense bargaining, we're still in the process of finalising a number of agreements for community health. The Health and Allied Agreement will be heading to ballot shortly. Thank you to those members who requested to see a draft of the agreement and provided valuable feedback. With respect to the Allied Health Professionals and the Medical Scientists Agreement covering dietitians, psychologists and audiologists and others, we are still seeking to resolve the last few concerns that members have. With respect to the medical scientists, there is a bargaining dispute that has been listed for this week at the Fair Work Commission. With respect to our health service members, there is a consolidation process of feedback that we've received from our recent rural and regional forums. That feedback centred on the review process for the nurses and midwives, mental health, allied health professionals and health and allied agreements. A big thanks to all of our rural and regional members who attended one of the forums in Lawn, Bairnsdale, Echuca, Albury-Wodonga or Stawell. Thank you very much for your feedback. We look forward to seeing you again at our next round of rural and regional forums in March. Presently, we're also doing a lot of work with respect to the Medical Specialists Agreement, working through the proposed schedule of saved provisions. We'll be working with individual health services as we progress that matter in coming weeks. And finally, the VHAA AGM is on the 12th of October. Members are always welcome to attend. Next week's podcast will be with respect to the recent security and patient transport reviews. We'll be providing more information to members through that podcast. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is consultant Yumbin Lin. Welcome, Yumbin.
Thank you for having me, Stuart.
Would you be good enough to reveal a clue which will give an indication of what the subject for today's discussion is?
My pleasure.
So, for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, could you describe the clue?
It's a metal gold-painted dinosaur that I've seen in your office.
And?
It's got the number one. It's holding within its T-Rex arms.
In its tiny T-Rex arms. On the basis of that particular clue, what would you say the subject for today's discussion is?
Something to do with the past. Review?
You're so close, but just so wrong. But you were just picking up the right kind of theme. So yes, indeed, the dinosaur does review, does indicate and represent the past. Hmm. It's also very helpful for just holding numbers. And in this case, it's holding the number one because it is now 1 year until bargaining is due to recommence. And so that's the subject for today's discussion, 1 year until bargaining and what to expect between now and the commencement of bargaining in September 2019.
Okay. So I suppose looking ahead then, Stuart, what are the critical dates?
So the next bargaining round commences really with the Nurses and Midwives Agreement.
And when does that one expire?
So the Nurses and Midwives Agreement expires on the 30th of March 2020. But there's a requirement on the parties to commence negotiations 6 months from that nominal expiry date, which means that we'll be talking sooner than that.
That means we'll be starting on the 30th of September 2019.
That's an excellent use of your fingers. But yes, 30 September 2019 is when we're due to start. So what we're going to do, though, is bring up on the screen some critical dates with regards to the agreements that we'll first start bargaining in the next round. So you'll see there we've got the Nurses and Midwives expiring 30 March 2020. Negotiations begin 30 September 2019. You'll see there the Allied Health Professionals due to expire on the 30th of June 2020. Negotiations beginning on the 30th of December 2019. The same dates apply to the mental health agreement. And then we have the Health and Allied Managers and Admin Agreement. That expires on the 30th of September 2020, with negotiations due to commence on the 30th of March 2020.
So in addition to the negotiations for the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, I suppose being due to commence on the 30th of September 2019, we've also got the Allied Health Professionals and Mental Health Agreements due to start in the next year?
Yeah, that's right. So as members can see from those dates that we had on screen, both of those are due to expire 30 June 2020. It does mean that we are scheduled to commence 30 December 2019.
So not quite on New Year's Eve, but we're pretty close.
Yes, there are some challenges associated with commencing negotiations in the close-down period between Christmas and New Year, but I'm sure we'll find a way to manage our way through that.
All right. So it's pretty rare that we do a podcast for something that's due to take place a year from now. Why draw attention to it?
So it marks something of a shift for us. We've just completed, for example, our most recent round of rural and regional forums.
And those are the ones that we do every March and September?
That's right. And the focus of the rural and regional forums was on agreement review. So those four agreements that we were identified as being the first four really to come up in the next round of bargaining, those are all in the review stage. And we've just been engaging with our rural and regional members to identify the provisions under those agreements that need attention.
Yeah. So we've talked about the review process before, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. So we did a podcast, episode 75, with regards to review and what it means. But very briefly, review is one of the four stages of bargaining.
So the four stages of bargaining being bargaining, implementation, review, and planning.
That's correct. And the review process is really a means by which we can ensure that our agreements are subject to continuous improvement, and that involves getting feedback from members as to which provisions require attention.
So in that case, for some agreements, do we need to review them from front to back?
Very much so. It's something that we did with the nurses agreement last time around as an attempt to make some of it easier to understand and apply where that was possible. That agreement isn't perfect, but there are still issues that arise from it, but it is better and clearer than it was before we started.
Right. Has this, or that process of review, has also, has it impacted on, I guess, the negotiations themselves?
Yeah, it did. It had a distinct impact on the negotiations for the nurses' agreement. So members will recall that we reached a heads of agreement with the ANMF 5 weeks after the nominal expiry date of the last agreement, with only a low level of industrial action and no bed closure. It's true to say that the decisions made by the government with respect to funding and wages were critical to the to that early resolution, mm-hmm. But also the redrafting and review process that preceded the negotiations were also critical in terms of getting to a heads of agreement early.
So we're taking something that was successful last time and we're going to apply it to the other agreements, is that right?
Firstly, that our agreements are much harder to read than they should be. That the reluctance to review critically the terms under our agreements means that we end up with terms that are either unclear or that nobody knows how to apply correctly. We end up sometimes with terms that actually have no work to do. We also found some instances where the agreement contradicted itself.
Certainly have experience. What's an example?
So under the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, there's a provision that states that nurses and midwives are entitled to two tea breaks.
That's pretty standard, isn't it?
It is pretty standard, but the hours of work clause said that work was continuous except for one meal break and one tea break. And that was a contradiction. So as part of the review of the agreement, we addressed that contradiction.
Right, so is there only one tea break now? Or?
No, there are two tea breaks. So the problem isn't the number of tea breaks, it's simply the fact that the agreement is inconsistent. Mm. And if you have an inconsistent agreement, it makes it harder to apply correctly.
And I guess in terms of clarity?
Yeah, I think it's worth remembering what an agreement is, and that if you take a document and you change bits and pieces of that document every 3 to 4 years and hope by the end of it that you have a coherent piece of work, I don't think that's possible. It's appropriate and necessary to subject our agreements to maintenance. So
kind of like housekeeping.
Housekeeping's a good term. There is never time to do it when bargaining is in full swing. It's something that we need to do now between agreements.
So I guess you could say the review process is in full swing.
It is, and we've got great feedback from members. I mentioned before the rural and regional forums, which has been really effective, and that has helped us identify some really key themes. And in future, what we'll do is separate podcasts for each of the agreements in review, going through those items that have been identified through that consultation process.
Okay. So what else is going to happen between now and September 30 of next year?
So between now and then, it's really a matter of organising the bargaining process itself and making sure that members are given information from us that ensures that they know how bargaining will work.
And what have we published to members about the bargaining process previously?
So really in advance, we've really given members very little information traditionally. Members have received updates as things have happened or after things have happened without a sense of the overall picture as to what is going to happen.
And we plan to change that.
We do. So now that the bargaining round the bargaining round that began in 2016 is coming to an end, what we'll be doing is developing and implementing those systems that we can publish to members.
Okay. And what does getting organised mean?
So it comes back to that issue of developing and publishing systems.
All right. Why is it necessary to develop and publish systems?
Bargaining remains a chief source of frustration for members. The status quo is unsatisfactory, and it's a challenging environment for our members.
Right. So when you say it's a challenging environment, what do you mean?
The thing about this sector is that demand for health services will always grow at a rate that is faster than the growth in labour. That means that the only way to meet demand will be to innovate.
And can enterprise bargaining support innovation?
So enterprise bargaining, broadly speaking, does not deliver innovation, but it can stifle it. One of the reasons that we're redeveloping the bargaining process is not only to get greater transparency, but so that we can get more voices at the table and take into account more points of view from within our membership.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, what else has happened so far?
So earlier this year, we developed an industrial relations strategy paper for our board.
And what was the board's response?
So the board endorsed that strategy paper in June of this year.
And is there any key idea that underpins this industrial strategy?
There is. And really it's about a transition away from a purely reactionary response to bargaining to one that is more about, that is far more proactive.
Mm. But given that parties in bargaining serve logs of claim on each other, isn't, I guess, a reactionary response inevitable?
That's partly true. It's true that we will receive logs of claim from other parties. We'll consult with members in an organised way to develop a response to those claims. But we also need to develop a point of view. There's a large amount of work that we can do that isn't radical or aggressive that can help make things work better, which we need to identify and pursue.
So in terms of moving away from, I guess, a predominantly reactionary approach, what else does that industrial relations strategy say?
So what it did is it identified things or broke things into three elements. And those three elements were a bargaining framework, bargaining policies, and a bargaining objective.
And I guess in respect of those three elements, what do they involve?
So parts of the bargaining framework to start with is that has items in it that members will be quite familiar with, at least in part. So the bargaining framework consists in part of the four stages of bargaining, for example.
And we discussed this before, and it's reflected in the monthly IR report.
That's right. That's how we organise our report into the four stages of bargaining, and that in turn is linked to a continuous improvement cycle.
Which is the purpose of the four stages of bargaining?
And in addition to that, there is member engagement and stakeholder engagement as part of that bargaining framework.
So I guess in terms of member engagement, there's something that occurs throughout forums and reference groups. What about stakeholder engagement?
So firstly, just in terms of the member engagement, it's broader than that. For example, we haven't had a consistent approach to having a member expert in the room for bargaining. It's happened with the nurses and doctors agreement to some extent, but not across across all agreements. So we need to change that. And also members have raised the idea of having an IR representative also present during those negotiations.
So it's a closer involvement, as it were.
That's right.
And back to stakeholder engagement.
So it really means having early discussions with regarding the process with both the department, but also unions.
So I guess in terms of engaging with unions, isn't there a risk that they'll instinctively oppose any change?
Yes, there is. So we have an industrial relations culture that has never really matured. So it may well be that there is suspicion or reluctance, but it's not a reason not to try and have a better, more mature discussion as the first step to getting an improved industrial relations environment that has an eye on the greater good for the sector.
Could you give me an example of that?
Well, let's take the what's the item that the unions are most concerned about and perhaps complain about the most?
Non-compliance.
That's right. So better agreements are really designed towards getting a better compliance outcome.
Is there anything else in terms of the bargaining framework?
Yeah, very much so. There is the standardisation of the bargaining process itself, and that's really an internal issue for us to make sure that we're systems-driven and that reduces the risk of error. You know, it's a process that we've been developing over the past couple of years.
Okay. So let's see what's on the screen.
So there on the screen you've got the elements that make up that bargaining framework, the four stages of bargaining, the standardisation of the bargaining process, member engagement, stakeholder engagement, and a continuous improvement cycle.
What's element two?
Bargaining policies. So that's really about nailing our colours to the mast and becoming more transparent. It's about having an endorsed position, removing the mystery from bargaining, at least in part.
And these are something that we'll continue to develop in the coming months?
Yes, they are.
And the third element?
Bargaining objectives. So by having an objective, we can soberly and properly assess the outcome.
And presumably it means providing information that shows assessment.
Yes, it does. So it's something that we've been utilising a bit, as you're aware, in the community health space, where we've had an opportunity to try some different things about a level of information to members.
Right. So we started this podcast by talking about some of the critical dates. How does this work fit in with those dates?
This is how we'll be spending the time between now and those critical dates. You know, I made the point at our recent rural and regional forums about what we'll be doing next March during the next round of forums. That is, we know what it is we'll be doing in that part of next year, which is talking about the bargaining process.
So the first part of next year will be when we start to engage more closely on the issue of what to expect from bargaining.
That's correct. And what will be critical for us is to get that message out, not just to our people and culture, HR, IR people with whom we engage on a regular basis, but more broadly within the membership, so that by the time we get to bargaining, there's complete confidence as to how information will be received, what steps will be taken, and how bargaining will function.
I mean, it sounds like we've got a lot of work to do.
We certainly do.
Well, thank you for taking me through all of this today, Stuart.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Hubert.
And I won't forget the way you helped me up when I was down. And I won't forget the way you said, darling, I love you. You gave me